Can you describe again from what the general outline of training is, hematology training in India? And then we can discuss this maybe what kind of differences and experience you all had during that period, what you would have wished for, you would have had, and or what you are glad you were experienced. And then we get this conversation going.
Yeah, so Nico, typically training in hematology is also, quite different across different centers in India. I think, we've spoken at length about that. And also the exposure during your medicine training as well as your pediatric training and your exposure to hematology is quite different across different centers in the country. Like even across the government-run hospitals, a lot of these places would not have super speciality training in hematology. So you wouldn't rotate through hematology at all during your internal medicine or pediatric training. I mean, Subbu, you can correct me the rest as well if I'm wrong somewhere, because not really sure about the pediatric centers, but for adult medicine centers, I mean, a lot of centers would not even offer a DM super speciality program, so you wouldn't rotate through that. So your exposure to hematology is quite restricted. And as per the hematology training, when you get into it, I mean, there are a couple of centers which do not offer a full-fledged transplant exposure. They don't have transplant units, certain hospitals which do offer transplant programs. And some of them, despite having hematology training, do not offer hands-on training or rotation through the transplant unit as well. So that's the major difference. I mean, not every hematologist in India would be trained in a similar manner.
So,
And
yeah, what drove you all to hematology then? What was the main goal? How did you decide to go for it?
I mean, Rajesh or someone else can answer this. I mean, what prompted him? He trained in Mumbai.
So actually, I have done my MD in Mumbai only. So like most of the people who have done MD, they know Dr. M.B. Agarwal and some few other hematologists where we used to take patients for consults. And we thought it is pretty interesting branch to look further. We are not aware exactly at the full extent of hematology when I have taken admission, because the how to take admission in Mumbai also there is different type of ways. At my time, this common entrance and all used to happen, but the like whatever little bit interaction I had with hematologists at that time, that inspired me to take hematology at that time. Yeah, but I agree that with Nihar that I was while taking even hematology, I was not fully aware of what is the scope of hematology and to what extent hematology covers the diseases and all.
And did any of you go into medical school with an idea that you wanted to be a hematologist, or for the majority of you, has it been something that's come afterwards through experience?
For me, it was definitely after my MD, but others, I would like to know.
So I, when I entered my residency, internal medicine residency, I was pretty sure that I did not want to do oncology and hematology. That was my thing going into it. The reason for that was I have an elder brother who's an oncologist, so I did not want to be compared to him for the rest of my life. Thankfully, he's moved on to GI also. The comparison isn't there anymore. But once I entered once I entered residency, I have been fortunate enough to train at a place which has a very robust clinical hematology program. So right at the starting, I had a excellent exposure with hematology, and I realized that it kind of ticks all the boxes to what I want to do with the rest of my life. It's very internal medicine oriented, which is the subject I love the most. It's very protocol driven, but there's a lot of scope for modifying protocol and trying out new things, and it's very research driven, which is what I want to do or what I wanted to do. So it kind of ticked all my boxes right at the outset in my first semester of internal medicine residency. And then from that point, I think I kind of decided that I wanted to be a hematologist, and that just stuck throughout my 3 years, and then went on to do my fellowship in hematology as well.
And when you talk, I mean, Nihar, you said there are significant differences in training, in education. What are these differences? Maybe even disparities. I would believe there is a significant difference between training in Mumbai and training in Lucknow or training in Vellore. But can you like pinpoint these features? What are the main differences, but on also maybe disadvantages to training in one center or area of India than another one?
So I can tell a little bit because I've been trained in Mumbai and in Vellore. So like when I was getting trained at KM, so their main focus on the treatment of new patients and quite more focus on hematopathological aspects, actually. Means when I was getting trained, half of my time I used to spend while looking at the peripheral smear slides, bone marrow slides and all, a lot more than what is traditionally done in Vellore and all. But means there was more of diagnostic part, you used to stay a lot of time. But because the transplant exposure was quite limited at KM, so we were not much had exposure to salvage chemotherapy, much salvage and transplant part. And because it was a government center, the exposure to new drugs which are available, that was also quite limited. When I moved to Vellore, what I've seen over there, that from the start, the people have very good exposure of transplant, 3 months every year, what they get. But from a diagnostic point of view, from slides and bone marrow reporting, that part I was quite strong. They have limited, I think, 3 to 5 months of posting over there, where they get a decent knowledge. But that's what that was benefit with, when I worked in KM. While the transplant and salvage chemos and the newer drugs, that's definitely a more benefit when we worked in Vellore.
So I'll also just add to that regarding the disparity or like the between the different training centers. What we possibly have to realize is that the transplants centers at a lot of locations are relatively new, as in they've come up in the last 10 or 15 years. And you generally, the larger transplant centers like CMC and Tata, they've been the ones which are going on for a long time. So obviously the volume and the kind of transplants that they do is going to be much larger. However, if you look at other centers, like even AIIMS or PGI, like I can talk about PGI, we only started haploidentical stem cell transplants and they like 7 or 6 years ago. Before that, we only used to do match sibling or MUDs. Now we're doing haploidentical transplants as our major allogeneic transplants. And that would possibly be the case at other centers as well, which I believe, like I know AIIMS New Delhi, the hematology department there has only started haploidentical transplants recently, like a few years ago. Before that, they were not doing it. I think, and Nihar can correct me, but I think that's true for SGPGA as well. So yes, a lot of the transplant centers are quite new. And I think then there is also going to be discrepancy in the pediatric training. So I can talk about PGI, Dr. Vinay is here. Obviously, he's trained there. I think he was a fellow when I was a resident still in medicine. So, but the pediatric even though the pediatric oncology program is now at least 10 years or 20 years old at PGI, they still don't have their own transplant program. And they'll only rotate with us for maybe a month or two in their 3 years. And the adult side ends up doing all the pediatric transplants as well. So there would be this, and most of the pediatric hematology programs are relatively, again, newer and younger in their age. So they don't have full-fledged transplant programs, or they're just starting out, I believe.
Okay. And Subi?
Yeah. So, can I add a bit? So I agree with what Charan said. So basically, the pediatric hematology oncology per se, the non-transplant hemonc training is quite robust in most of the places in our country. And it's a very dedicated program in most of the places, like 2 to 3 years. Most of the centers that are running a program are high volume centers, which treat a large spectrum of diseases. So the thing is, we have a lot of clinical exposure or experience, but I think we are a little setback is the resources that are limited here. So most of the times, at least in the BMT part, The hemonc part, I think, is more or less nicely streamlined now, more protocolized. And as a country, there are many committees that are coming out with set protocols and things. But the BMT part is really scattered here and there, and it's not as per the, like, we don't follow much protocols and things. And we know that the need is there, but again, the resources and things like that. So if I have to say about the BMT training per se, most of the places in the country offers probably a year or a little more than that, 18 months training or something like that. And it's not in a systematic way that the training happens. So I think we have a lot of clinical resource. Is yet to be set into the BMT.
Subbu?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we did lose Vinay towards the end of it, but I think what he meant to suggest was, and I'll completely echo that. For example, from whatever I could gather until now, I think training is generally quite fragmented across places. If you see, there is no structured protocol. Every institute, for example, and I'm happy that we have representatives from major kind of institutes here. We have got a representative from CMC Vellore, which happens to be kind of the leading hematology training center in India. And we've got representatives from Tata Memorial Hospital. We've got representatives from Mumbai. We've got from Chandigarh. So it's quite a good eclectic mix. In pediatrics, however, the training in pediatric hemonc, so generally the process is you train in pediatrics first. After that, depending on whether you're able to crack an entrance or depending on your scores in an exam, you get allotted to different specialties, and then the institutes kind of give off seats, and it's pretty competitive, you would know by now. Pediatric hemonc is again slightly more fragmented because there are some centers which run only a pediatric oncology program, which means that they would not see benign hematology patients. They would see leukemias, lymphomas as a part of, like, because they are cancer. But there are some centers who would not touch aplastic anemias. They would not touch thalassemia, sickle cell. There are some programs which do pediatric hematology, but sometimes they would not handle kind of tumor-related aspects of hematology. Transplant, as rightly mentioned, is something that is not given much importance during your training of 2 to 3 years under pediatric hemonc. Even if it is, you just rotate in the unit, and it again depends whether the place where you train has a transplant unit or not. Sometimes these units are run by the adult physicians, which means that the intake of pediatric patients for transplant is itself limited by a sense of bias. So most of the transplanters who now work in India who are now established in India have been kind of alumni or trained abroad, especially in countries like UK, Australia, or Canada. And then they have gone back with a sense of purpose to kind of be a part of the growth story there, set up units, and they have in turn sent their mentees abroad. And then some of them return back, some of them choose to stay abroad. And that's how kind of the transplant program through India has kind of built and is still sustaining.
But if we focus on maybe first, I think there are these two differences between education, maybe like content wise, and then what Vina said, like resource wise. Maybe if we dissect these two, maybe we can ask you from your experience what you identify as like the main factors that you wished you would have had or something that maybe is completely different between each center, or what needs to change, what is also good, what works well, what you maybe have as an advantage over other centers in Europe, for instance. Not everything is bad, I believe. Everyone does what he can or she can. Maybe Nutan, do you have anything you, when you look back or when you look at your course now, what you would have wished you would have had, or what works good and what could be improved, for instance, in your training?
Benign as well as enough chunk of patients. I think that is patient load is quite good, benign as well as malignant part of it. But I feel finances part of it can be, if it is a bit better, so that is one thing I feel is it could have been a better way. Otherwise, patient load and all I feel is quite good. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of national schemes and funds which may help patient, but still the finances is the part which I feel can be improved.
I would like to add something. Like as Nico said, there are two aspects of the training. One is the education part of it, and another is the resources part of it. Now, most of the centers in India, the education part of it is not completely structured. Most of the learning that happens is through bedside clinics. There is no structured program to teach a resident what to do and how to do it. It is mostly you continue through the residency, you learn things from bedside or from discussions. And the second thing is, as Dr. Nutan had said, resources. So as Vinay had told that our salvage regimens or transplant numbers are not proportional to what volume we have. And one major reason is because we do not have adequate funds. Most of the patients attending this training centers are mostly government institutes, and patients who come there are resource limited or resource constrained. They cannot afford a high-end therapy, either be a transplant or any kind of monoclonal antibodies, which are now majorly being used to achieve good outcomes. So these are the two aspects I think if can be addressed, to have a structured program and to define the resources in a more better way, maybe we can have a better programs.
Mm.
And do you think there's anything like we can do as like groups of trainees internationally to try and work together?
Yeah, if there could be a structured program as to what a first year resident should be knowing, should be academically inclined to, or what kind of academic materials they need to address to their patients. So I think that is a good way in a training program that can be introduced.
Mm. Nihal?
Yeah, so there's a severe lacuna, amongst early career trainees, like, you know, first years and even up to like end of training, actually, about, we don't have a structured education program, as everyone rightly alluded to. So by that, I mean, you know, that's where probably all of us can get together and, think of something. We are not exposed to reading journal articles, at least across a lot of centers. Like a lot of early career trainees would not know how to interpret something. It's only about reading the abstract and just drawing a conclusion out of it. And that's partly because, you know, the huge patient numbers sometimes deter you from, you know, having good academic activities. It's the least of your concern at times, like across a crowded center. I think that's one thing which can be easily addressed, because this arranging funds and everything requires a lot of government support, and you know, it's like a long-term plan. But amongst the short-term things, I believe that maybe this can be something which is easily addressed, because you guys are much better at that. Like, you know, we had this conversation at length when we were traveling across India about how, you know, biostats is something which, you know, most people, at least I am, poor at, and that's something which is quite easy to address if you introduce that right at like, you know, an early stage in your career, like first year residency probably.
And there is another thing I think in which PBMT could help a little bit, because most of the difficulty, it does not come during the tenure of your residency program, because there is always a mentor who is guiding you through the therapy protocols or guiding your decisions. But it comes just immediately after your residency, when you start really working by yourself, you start treating patients by yourself. Mm-hmm. At that point of time, you realize where your shortcomings are. If there is a training program maybe given by you, or a structured program which can be designed by you, either at your place or in centers in India, which could address this lacuna, because not everyone will have the same kind of shortcomings as the other one.
Some people might have a very good exposure to benign hematology, benign transplants. Some may be having very good exposure to malignant transplants. Some could be having very good exposure to aplastic anemia transplants. So I think this kind of structured program or a structured training, if you could either provide at your centers by taking residents or people who have just started working out post-residency, could be a very helpful gesture.
Yeah, maybe I'll just add something to that, and then Subbu and Veena, you can come on. But I completely agree with you, and I'm very, very happy that you say this. And you also think this, because that's how we usually work, is to first we work together and we identify what our problems and our issues are, because we all went through the same process. We all have the same experience. There's an obvious approach that, I mean, every society and everyone agrees is maybe helpful, is to have a mentor and then go through all the work. But that covers only one trainee and one mentor. What we are all about is try to work together from a trainee basic level and then create something. So I am really happy that we maybe can think of a curriculum or like main facts, key points that we think we all need to cover, and then try to outline this for all of you. Because I mean, statistics, stats, reading an article, obviously centers in Europe and trainees in Europe, they can do this, but not everyone. So not every one of my colleagues can do this. So this is a universal topic that should be covered for everyone. And we are very, very happy and lucky to do this with you all. And we can work on that together, I'm sure. Subbu.
All right. I think the general notion is that from a clinical standpoint, I think we are fairly kind of well-trained. And when I say we, I am now considering myself as a part of Indian, this thing, and Indian training, basically. I think we've got a lot of clinical exposure. We are kind of slightly more adept at managing patients, be it both emergencies as well as outpatients. I think the lacune where I felt when I came to the UK and I saw the training was the fact that the exposure of the trainees here to the meetings and to all the latest stuff that happens in the transplant world. Most of us, for example, just to give a random example out of my head, would be kind of what happens in gene therapy or say for leukemia. I mean, right now, the paper that was recently published in NEJM about the base edited CD7, that the trainees here in the UK, they already had an idea of the things that was happening. That reaches about 5 years, 10 years down the line later to the trainees from the countries in India. I think one way to be, which I think I did flag up on one of our earlier meetings as well, as to whatever the updates happen, at least in the EBMT-driven meetings, if we could kind of crystallize the important information from each of those meetings and kind of update on the EBMT website or the e-study platform that you guys created, maybe that could be a good way to start and kind of disseminate the information from the latest meetings onto the trainees all over the world.
Yeah, really good idea. We can sort of have like a highlights of the, and then highlights in each area as well. So your adults, your pediatrics, your GVHD type stuff, to try and ensure people can direct themselves to whatever's most relevant for them.
Vinay?
Yeah, so what I felt is more practical for this kind of a platform is to probably disseminate something like SOPs that are necessary to be done in a BMT program. So what lacks in our country is the heterogeneity with which the treatment protocols are based, especially in the BMT world. And what I learned when I was in UK was most of the things are SOP, like it's protocolized or SOP based. So there is, the system is well set in so that there is no need to have a lot of it comes to the patient management. I think we work more at a spinal level as of now in the transplant world. We need to have SOPs. So that is one thing that will definitely be a good thing for us to actually for like if we can get the SOPs, which can be done in a resource limited settings, that would be a great help. And the second thing is the national MDTs that happen in UK. What happens is centers treating patients, few are treating 100 patients in a year, transplants, few are doing just 20, few are doing 10. So a transplant center doing only 10 is always not very confident about taking decisions about a patient. So if we can have something in the training group or in this EBMT training group, something that we can do something like a MDT kind of a thing and get inputs from the UK, from the EBMT committee or something, it would be helpful. So these two points, one is the SOP and the second one is something to have a regular MDT meetings or something.
Madam, please.
So I think there are two things which are separate. So I'll now obviously limit myself to transplant training only. One is that there is a discrepancy in the different centers that you are training at in terms of transplant. So not only is there a discrepancy in your updated knowledge of transplant and GVHD or newer advances, but there may be a discrepancy in your basic understanding and your basics of transplant as well. So there needs to be, if you are to address the issue, you would need to address both possibly simultaneously. So I completely agree with what Subbu has said, that a lot of trainees who do train in Europe and the UK and in the US would be attending your EHA, your EBMT, your TCT meetings at your ASH and on a regular basis, which is not very possible for patients or for trainees in India or in other countries. Like I think all of us, I think, would have maybe attended one international meeting at one of these places during the entirety of our residency. And fellowship. I include myself in that. I've only attended one ASH meeting during my fellowship. So obviously, while the newsletter or an idea of how you can get those updates from those recent meetings is good, what we also need to do is simultaneously maybe either, like what Dr. Vinay had said regarding SOPs of basics of transplant or maybe some lecture series or just even tutorials, which are then tagged on to something, or maybe try something like a certification course, which does not have to be formal. Because getting anything implemented into the curriculum of an already existing transplant or a hematology program would be difficult simply because you'd have to run through so much of red tape and so much of barriers in terms of the regulatory bodies, etc. So it would have to be a parallel course or a parallel thing, in my opinion, which can be easily done online, and that would maybe be something which could be done or possibly needs to be looked at.
Do you guys have access or are any of you registered with Chimera? Subbu's just written in the chat the exact same thing, but that's sort of a free to access e-learning platform that you can get onto through the EBMT Trainee Committee website. You just have to register. You don't need to be a member of EBMT or pay any money, but all of the educational resources there are freely available once you've registered. And there's about 8 modules there at the minute, but there's plans for several more modules and complete separate e-courses looking at pediatrics and things to come in the next few months, hopefully. So we definitely, in the interim, obviously, these are all great ideas and we've got so much to do and work on moving forward, but I'd encourage you all to register on Chimera and just see if there's any particular modules that appeal to you. Everything's divided into short 10-minute presentations as well, so it doesn't need to take up a huge chunk of your time. It's just if you've got a spare moment and you want to look up something or understand a bit more about a certain area, it can be really good just to log on to and recap.
What we also should think of is maybe to get a module only for meeting highlights of every like EBMT, EHA, ASH. And I mean, what we are all about is free access. So what would be also ideal, because it's it should be a community project, is that we maybe aim for you to get access to one of these meetings in order for you to produce then this module as kind of like a work and work relationship that you get. Because you do this, you get free access to the meeting, at least for, because all every basically every meeting is now like hybrid, so you can get at least like the virtual access. So this would be one approach. Yeah, Subbu?
The other thing I was thinking is basically for mentorship opportunities, the way EBMT can step in for the residents who are kind of approaching the end of training or in the middle of training. So as far as I can tell, most of the training kind of courses in India are basically clinic-based, which basically means that you've teaching, which is bedside. The opportunity to do anything on the bench side is fairly limited, unless you are in a slightly more kind of PhD-like position or an academic post. Most of the training courses in India are clinical posts. And by the time, kind of, even if you're interested in a PhD, I think sometimes time is not on your side, or sometimes you don't have the stamina to kind of pursue a PhD at the end of your clinical training. Is in any way, and this in fact an open question to Nico, you and Claire, basically, on what are the kind of pathways or roadmaps for a trainee who has finished kind of a clinical training in India and is looking for an academic post elsewhere, either in the UK or Europe. Is it possible? I know it's a kind of a long drawn question, but can EBMT help in any form or way?
Yeah, I think, so Claire.
Yeah, I think certainly these are all things that are offered by EBMT centers, like clinical research fellowships and stuff. I think, yeah, it's not necessarily that these things are advertised through EBMT, but I don't know what Nico thinks, but certainly like things within the UK, as I'm sure you'll have experienced, are advertised like on national websites and NHS jobs and things like that. So I think, well, I guess Nico and I can approach EBMT just to sort of like flag up to representatives from each country if they have research fellowship posts coming up. If they can highlight them to us, then that can be something that we can share, be it through the trainee committee Twitter platform or through various email circulations that we have, just to make people aware that these opportunities are available, and because they're available for anyone really.
Yeah, one thing I'll add, and sorry Deep, then you're on, is what we obviously want to implement. I think that's there are some things that are so obvious, but they are so hard to implement, like a mentorship program. So a mentorship program in general, I think it's the most obvious thing to do for a trainee committee. But the next step is then, how do you do that? We try to do that. So we met at EHA, other societies, they also try to do that, but it's a thing that needs to be very, very well organized, because it involves a lot of money. What I now receive from, I mean, I'm happy for it, but I'm very, very sad about it. Since I've been to India with Nihar and posted it quite openly, I get basically every day I get a question, a request for coming to our center for an observership. And the problem now is we cannot do this. For this, there needs to be one, obviously, a mentorship program, and we do everything we can. But the other thing that I would personally think is the best thing, that's what we experienced with other areas of the world, is how can we also implement something in India that is like worthwhile, an exchange of experiences, an exchange of knowledge, maybe with another mentorship program with European centers or even American centers, but to maybe diversify this approach a little bit, because I think it, as long as we keep this one direction, you come, you go to the to UK, maybe you go back to UK. That would be another question that I have, is what are the factors for you to go back to India first, and then why do you leave India? These are, I think, things that we can discuss also now, that to understand what should be implemented in such a mentorship program, what would help you grow in India, but maybe also abroad. And that's these are the things that we definitely need to work on. But I would really be interested in, okay, how can we also help you guys establish something in India? We didn't talk about a training network at the moment, but maybe we finish with that. But now, sorry, Deep, your turn.
So I wanted to add, like, as a resident, we could also, it would be nice that if we have an interactive session, probably once in a month, where a resident will present a case undergoing a patient in the transplant unit, and experts from abroad would join and chip in with their ideas and how to go about that case. And especially they can consider like resources which we have, and we can explain to them that these are the resources which we have, and how would they go about a particular case using those resources, because not everything is available we do not have everything which patients get outside India. So that an interactive session like this every monthly would help a resident to grow in the knowledge, and also for the betterment of the patient. And another thing which, as a resident, which we lack here, is that we do not have a formal period during our residency for research purpose, like how to go about research, how to start with a clinical project. We have absolutely no idea about that during our residency training. So we do not have a formal period, like a 6 weeks or 8 weeks period for like a major, most of the centers, in Europe and US, they have. So EBMT can also organize for residents, like the residents who wish to, be a part of the research. So how they can start with, what are the things which are expected of them, and how to proceed about. So that would be nice.
I completely agree, and I'm, what I don't know what Claire thinks, or other of you who experienced other areas than India, is that what always bugs me is that there are like these research grants or like as sponsorships for or program for clinical research training, where 10 people are selected from 100 or more applicants. And I think that should be free for everyone, at least on an online platform, because research should be a skill that should be taught to everyone. And I think if you address this now, we should maybe think of something, a platform that we establish that is free, community-based, where everyone can learn at least the basic skills. If you need to learn something hands-on, obviously that needs some more organization, but these certain skills, knowledges, I think should be organized free for all, and that is something we can definitely do in the future together.
Yeah, and I think moving forward onto sort of next steps, because I think I'm just in the interest of time, because I think we could definitely talk all night about all of these things, but what we can do in terms of immediately as a group together setting up a network for trainees moving forward. Some of the points you've highlighted have been really good, but maybe we could start off with simple things that should be relatively easy to achieve. So, for example, a case of the month, whereby anyone who had seen an interesting case or was dealing with a case that you wanted to get people's opinion of, you could sort of, if we get a group together whereby you can submit it through email and people can have a look at it, and then we can all arrange a time maybe to meet for half an hour or so and discuss the case. And I think probably as well, we can look, and it may be easier for some of us working in centres where we can access papers and look at how this issue may be managed depending on different settings. Obviously, it's not going to be helpful to you guys working in a centre where you don't have a specific drug available if we're sending you papers saying that, oh, this is the latest development to treat this if you have access to all these resources. But I think from that case, you can learn a lot about how treatment is moving forward. And I think for those of us who are working in centres where we do have access to some of the newer novel agents, it's good for us as well to think backwards the other way, what we would do if it wasn't available. And I think that can help with really understanding the pathology of what's going on. So maybe we could look immediately as one of the things we can do is setting up sort of like a trainee network case of the month type thing.
I completely agree. And I really like your point on that it's not always about the new CAR T cell therapy for ALL, etc. Also as a skill or as content, but also maybe really clinically based, what should we do with that patient? How should we do the workup? What is available in your circumstance? What would we do? And yeah, to that everyone learns from this case. I think that's a really nice idea.
And same as well, alongside, it can be things like selecting a donor, because that's going to be different depending on what center you've worked in, what your experience is, and things like that. So I think it can be really interesting, and we can all learn a lot from these discussions. In terms of like the meeting highlights from the major meetings, I think that's definitely something we need to take forward, and perhaps might be easier in the first instance, instead of trying to put it on for a Chimera module, which would very quickly become outdated after the next conference. Perhaps if we run it like a kind of podcast type thing, whereby we have different people who have focused on different areas, so we can get a snapshot of the latest developments in adults, pediatrics, and other elements of each conference, and then just run it, and then we can post it, and it can be freely available for people to view and listen to when they get chance.
Yeah, what I also like is, I agree to that. And what I also like, and what I saw with the European Society for Cardiology, what they do is they produce these summary cards of main trials with a very, very nice outline. The New England started this also now with their main articles, where they have also like two or three figures, and then conclusions, the study design limitations. That could be something we could do, produce like everyone can see that. And then we do also this free for all podcast, YouTube meeting, where things are discussed, and either people are invited to come and discuss this, or we do it, we create like a presentation type of thing where it's just a monologue presenting the results. What do you guys think? What would you like to have? Everything, I guess.
Do you think if we were to set up sort of like a trainee network case of the month type thing, that people would submit their cases?
Yes, definitely.
One other question that I have is, moving forward also to think about your circumstances, do you really know how things really look like in India? Or is that basically, are some areas really like a blank sheet for you? Because then we could also think about really doing some kind of a survey or project to really understand, okay, how many transplants are done and where are they done? What does the exposure look like in certain areas in India and beyond? Would you think that would be helpful for you guys?
I think the ISBMT, which is the Indian Society of Bone Marrow Transplant, they have the yearly data, which is published on their website, as to how many transplants are done and which centers are doing it and what areas. That information, I think, is easily available on their website already. I think most transplant centers are registered with them.
I think that's a great segue into probably, I think, to have something tangible, like in terms of what you think about a survey or some kind of a study to understand what the baseline is. If we are, as you had initially suggested about going bottom up, I think now we have a good idea of where we need to focus on the trainees. If you need a survey or if you need kind of something like a study or something, I think it's best to approach them directly or via EBMT. Nico and Claire, what would you suggest?
Yeah, I think if the information is already available, then it's probably something that's not going to be the sort of best possible use of people's time and resources. I think probably the main focus should be trying to make more resources available to people as soon as possible. And by doing that, we may actually recognize there are more issues and find out better ways to address them. And hopefully, as people become more aware of different resources, they can help us and get involved in helping to grow them and make them work in the best way possible for other people.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's from our side at least and a lot to do. obviously with the help of you guys. And yeah, I think what we should do is maybe I personally would say we can do this case per month really with a focus on the collaboration with India and EBMT trainee. So we obviously start this now with all of you, and maybe we create something like a document where we have for the next let's say 12 months selected cases for every month, and then we meet and discuss this case together.
And we, alongside that document, we can create a pro forma for submissions, so we make sure that we have all the information relevant to a case to talk about what particular issues are being raised, and we know exactly what you want to get out of it by submitting and talking about this case.
Yeah. And this should be free for all. So I think this discussion should not be between us now, but should be circulated to other trainees in India and Europe as well, and the rest of the world, whatever. Yeah.
Similarly as well, if there's a particular person who's renowned for having particular experience in an area that a case is about, we can look to potentially inviting them to the discussion as well, just to try and get as much out of it as possible, be it be from someone based in India or someone with an EBMT.
Yeah. Okay.
I guess you're wrapping up, but just like one question. Is a formal association with ISBMT and a formation of a Indian counterpart of the EBMT trainee also a part of the agenda? Because I think that would be a great starting point for a more formal association.
That's obviously... So the general approach would be obviously to have an official connection. The only thing that was unknown to us now is what the real representation in India really is, if there is any, for a start. And if there is one, is this one really representative enough? I don't know what you would say is that ISBMT, that's what I heard now from you, is the one that should be the counterpart to EBMT trainee committee. But is there already a representation of trainees, early career physicians in the ISBMT?
Not that I'm aware of. There's no separate training committee or any of, in fact, any of the associations that I believe. So we have, like, obviously you have like the EHA, and then you have the EBMT. We similarly have the Indian Society of Hematology and Blood Transfusion, which is the counterpart of the EHA, I guess, and then we'll have the ISBMT, and then you have smaller groups as well, such as the HCC and so on, who do run cooperative trials. But I don't think any of them would have a trainee committee or a specific like a section devoted for trainees as such. And to my mind, ISBMT would be the closest counterpart to EBMT, so they would be the people to approach to have a formal association and then set up an Indian counterpart for the EBMT committee, because that's how we will have the maximum dissemination, I think.
Yeah,
and I also think that's something we should certainly aim for. I think one thing to say is that something we've learned over the last few years in trying to help other organizations arrange trainee networks is that often if you go straight from to the top and have to go from the top down, there's quite a lot of like litigation and various processes involved. So I think that certainly we can look to do alongside this, but it'd be really helpful in the interim if we can get these sort of like case of the month and other collaborations going. And then when we go to them and we've got concrete evidence of things that are working for trainees within India, and then use that as a as another sort of incentive for them to push things forward with if with formalizing a trainee network for ISBMT.
I completely agree. The pressure, I think, usually comes from bottom to top with content. So if we produce something together, and you already work with us, and we are an official committee, then I think there's more leverage and more freedom for you to do what you want. Because as Claire mentioned, is the world is a powerful place, and people want to have their biggest influence wherever they are. I don't know how it is in India, but I imagine it will be the same as in Europe. And we had the fortune that we just grew from the bottom to the top. And this makes people also very uncomfortable. I can understand this. But as long as it's not like really confronting everyone and just producing first and then slowly but surely be created as a, let's call it, young ISBMT or whatever, I think is maybe the way to go. But we clearly don't know how this works in India. So that's the thing maybe that you need to give us as evidence, what is best for you, because not everything that works in Europe works in India. So that there needs to be obviously some kind of adaptation. Yeah, but I think working together and starting this now, and also if you have something in mind that we should do, or we could do together, or you want to do, and certain issues you want to raise, you're completely free to talk with us about this, and then we'll see how we can work on this. Subbu.
Sorry, I just have a wailing child in the background, so discount that. But I think we need to focus on both the things. So actually, the case of the month is a brilliant idea. Involve regional faculty members as well, and not just have foreign faculty on the same panel. I mean, who would give insights to how? So I think a case for the month would be a good starting point to kind of pull the strings on both sides of the faculty so that they're brought on the same page. And then if we have kind of evidences of this happening rather frequently, and we would want regional, for example, I can give a simple example of, say, for example, a VOD patient has come up, okay, and we don't have defibrotide. So how would you treat a VOD patient? So there are regional options like N-acetylcysteine. You've got so many other stuff. So what would you do if, or for example, there's evidence of low dose defibrotide and not give at the recommended dose of 25 milligram per day? Stuff like these, I think, and that is a good point to bring in faculty from both sides. In fact, what Charanpreet had suggested, I was also kind of slightly of the similar idea to go from the top to bottom. And then that's when I was told about the challenges that they have had while establishing associations with the LABMT. And I mean, I know one of the secretaries of ISBMT, and it was told to me that they're starting a trainee, but I'm not sure as to when that would happen. Trainee association under the ISBMT wing as well, but I'm not sure when that will happen or how that will materialize. I think this form of a forge between the lower rungs of both sides and then taking it up is actually one way of doing it. But I think at some point in time, we would need to formally liaise with them to, if we would want the future trainees to become projects that happen in between the ABMT and ISBMT. That is, I think, the end in the larger vision. And because we have representation from a majority of the centers that pull a heft within the ISBMT itself, which is basically, and I mean, as is the case with most associations, there are certain institutes that have more representation than the others. We've got people from all those institutes here on this meeting.
Great. So I think moving forward, we certainly have this trainee case of the month thing to get established. We've got the meeting highlights podcast thing that we can work on. And I think research skills have been mentioned, and that would fit really nicely into a Chimera module. So if anyone wants to get involved with that, we'll approach people from our committee as well. And we'll look to try and get that sorted over the next few months. We'll post the link to Chimera we can circulate that amongst the email group, can't we, Nico, with the invitation?
Yes. So the registration process is not that 21st century like, but we will send you the website where you can register, and then you need to just register as a non-member EBMT, but anyway, it's for free. So if you made it through, you're in, you will never get out, but it's a tough way to get in. We will surely circulate this, yes. And I think with that, if anyone else has not anything to add or any questions, I think I can speak for Claire and for Subu and for Niha, that to thank you all for being here, and also to organizing these trainees. Subu and Niha, thank you so much. And I think there is a lot of things to do. And I think, as Subu highlighted, that this should only be the start. And we need to start somehow. And I think we clearly have three main lines we can work together on. And if anyone of you has anything to add, or you want to participate in our meetings, or you want to create your own meetings, you'll feel free to do that. And we continue to be in touch, and we will circulate the document for the cases. We will, with your permission, we would publish this conversation to just get this conversation out. I think that's, especially for the cases, really important to create this kind of visibility that we are open and free to get this started.
I would also like to plug in. Sorry, yeah, I thought you were done.
I'm done.
I would also like to plug in about the Chimera thing. So yeah, and the Twitter case of the month, which is something like a case of the month, which I think Lars, who's one of the co-members of the BMT trainee committee from Copenhagen, he runs it. That's also some kind of this. Also, it's not as interactive as one might want it to be. But it's kind of a poll wherein you get options at answering questions. And obviously, it's not just one Twitter case, because after that, you have kind of a good lead up to what the case was. And then it gives you resources to read upon in between. So something like that, the case of the month, I anticipate it to be much more interactive, with the faculty also participating in it. Of course, and thank you guys. Thank you, Vinay. Thank you, Rajesh, for being awake, first of all, at this perfectly antisocial hour. I mean, I know it's already 11. I thank you. There are still some of my friends who betrayed me by not joining, but that's okay.
No problem. So let us know how we are scheduling this case of the month, and then we can go ahead further.
In fact, Rajesh, you had a brilliant case of a suspected donor-derived leukemia, which we had shared on a WhatsApp group. Why don't, I mean, that can be kind of one of those cases with which we can start, isn't it? And we'll have kind of experts on, yeah.
Definitely, we can do that. So let me know when we are planning to do it. So I can make one PPT or maybe just write it up and I'll send. And then we can have a discussion.
Perfect. Yes, sorry for being so late. And really thank you that you're all up now and still. Thank you so much, everyone. Have a good night. Sleep well. And don't work too much.